Hello and welcome to the Crisis Point Podcast. I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Be sure to like and subscribe to the channel, wherever you might listen to it, wherever you might watch it. Also, if you could, consider donating to Crisis Magazine. You can just go to crisismagazine.com/donate. I need to get a little thing to put that up on the screen. I got to get around to doing that. Anyway, crisismagazine.com/donate if you want to donate to Crisis. Today, we have another returning guest. You are our second returning guest after Scott Hahn, Kennedy.
Great.
We have Kennedy Hall. He is the author of two books and the host of the conservative talk radio show, The Kennedy Profession, on the Crusade Channel. I've been on that program a couple of times. It's great. And he's also a contributing editor to 1 Peter 5, a regular writer for LifeSite News. He's married with four children, correct? Four?
Yeah, four
children. He lives in Ontario, Canada. Mm-hmm. And he is, you can also find his work at kennedyhall.ca. And so we had two references there at the end to Canada, both your website.ca and the, you're in fact in Ontario, Canada. So we want to talk about today, we want to talk about the situation for Catholics in Canada. So first, welcome to the program, Kennedy.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah. By the way, your last time you were on is one of our most popular episodes ever. So, no expectations or anything.
You just got to make sure you name it something like Canada's, you know, gone to the dogs or something like that.
Yeah, I know something. I got to think of some good title for it. Anyway, so the Crisis audience, at least on YouTube, I don't know about the podcast. I just looked it up before we went on here, and it's about 65% in the United States and about 5% in Canada. And then so that's 70% of the audience, and then everybody, a bunch of different countries for everybody else. And so a lot of people here who are watching this, listening to this, are living in the United States, but we want to talk today about Canada. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something obviously Canadians should care about. I think Americans should care about as well. First of all, just because Catholics in Canada are our brothers and sisters in Christ. But I also think that there's a relationship between the two countries. What happens in Canada can impact us and vice versa. So what I want to do first is I just want to get a sense, first of all, what the Catholic Church and the Catholic bishops in particular like in Canada before COVID. Let's go before COVID first, because I think, you know, things obviously changed there. I think it revealed things. But anyway, before COVID, like in America, we know the USCCB is just a disaster. It's awful. But what was it like in Canada? Like, what's the status of the Catholic bishops and what's the church like in Canada in general?
Well, the little bit of history, the Catholic Church in Canada is actually a very integral part of the country. I mean, arguably, Quebec was the last strong European nation. Catholic European nation, in a sense, right? I mean, when you go to Quebec, it says La Capitale Nationale when you go to Quebec City. So they call themselves a nation, even unofficially. Clearly, it was Catholic. And even the West, you know, if you go out to Manitoba, Manitoba is actually named after an indigenous word for basically the Most High God. It was a word in their language for the Catholic understanding of God. Anyway, so that's even there, that's based in that. And Alberta was basically made by priests. You can actually look that up. It's pretty amazing history, despite all the nonsense about the residential school stuff and Justin Trudeau stoking all literal fires last summer. There's a pretty glorious history between the natives and the Catholic Church. Obviously, there's some problems, as there is with any contact between civilizations, but generally speaking, it was a very wonderful history. So the history of the Catholic Church in Canada is actually pretty influential and pretty positive. Now, even in the province of Ontario, until recently, in the last probably 30 years, about 50% of the population was a baptized Catholic. Today, it's still about 30%, which of a population of 14 million people, 14 and a half million people, it's pretty significant. And that's not Quebec, where it's probably, it was 100% until 40 years ago. In any case, since the new springtime, 1960s, things have not gone so well, as is the case everywhere else on earth. But the thing about what makes Canadian Catholic, let's say contemporary history, a little bit different than America, is that in Canada, there's really no such thing as a culture war. You know, thanks be to God, you saw what happened in Virginia. There was an actual, you know, for better or for worse, there was a standing up against critical race theory and all these kinds of things. And it really was culture war in your face. And Americans can get really excited about that, which is a good thing. That's part of the American fighting spirit. that can be in excess, and you can be revolutionary, and it, and you, you know, in the States, you have moments like in Virginia, but you also have the insanity of Ocasio-Cortez, et cetera. So there really is two extremes all the time in American politics. In Canada, it's all lukewarm. Everything's basically lukewarm. Trudeau is a little bit of an exception, but his actions do not match his rhetoric. So over the last 40, 50 years, you've seen a, well, it's a slow acquiescence to modernity and secularism on behalf of the bishops. Nothing too radical, but also no real defense against the radical onslaught. So it's sort of this middle ground. The other part of Canadian Christian history is the Anglican Church. You know, Canada is an English colony, essentially. We still have the Queen on our money. I'm ashamed to say that we have a monarchical connection, considering what Prince What's-His-Name is saying about, you know, the human race and the world's going to end and climate lockdowns and all that. But we do have this English patrimony. So part of this English history is that Via Media, is that middle road between Rome and, you know, Luther, you know, this idea that you can have a very compromising Christianity. Well, you know, Breitbart was famous for saying that politics are downstream from culture. Well, the culture is downstream from the cult, right, from the church. And that cultus of Canadian Christianity is very much a middle lukewarm sort of one, just by nature being Anglican. So you see that in the personality of the Anglosphere here in Canada, which is why people watch Canada and they go, what's going on? Why are you not rioting in the streets? We just don't know how. It's just not something that we do. It's never been something that we do. We're a loyalist. We're not, you know. So the bishops have really adopted that spirit in the Anglosphere. So you see less things like soupage. You know, you see less radical, like, it's very unlikely you'll see a Canadian Catholic bishop go full Pachamama. But you'll also... they're very like wet blankets. That's kind of, if that's a, I think that under gives an oversight in a little bit of a nutshell. So at this point, because the culture has gone so far left, even the sort of moderate Canadian Catholic bishops, they're basically centrists at best, and might give a tacit mention of protecting the unborn or something like that. But that's about as conservative as it gets.
Yeah, are there any, like, I'm trying to think if I've heard of any what I consider good Catholic bishops from Canada, because, you know, we have a few that, you know, Bishop Strickland down in Texas, for example, you know, has done some good. Bishop Corleone does some good stuff. You know, I mean, you know, there's definitely some bishops here in America that at times can be counted on to say and do some decent things. But is there any in Canada in the last maybe 20 years or so that you would say has really kind of stood out, gone against that kind of Canadian flow to really stand up for the church?
There was one gentleman, I forget his name, I'm sad to say, but he was literally the bishop of the Northwest Territories. Talk about putting him out into Siberia, literally Canadian Siberia. He was good. I actually heard him. I think he still is up there, but the diocese is the size of Western Europe, literally. I mean, it's the size of Newfoundland and I think it's Newfoundland and Nunavut, which is literally the size of like 11 Texases or something.
Wow.
And only has 100,000 people or something like that, and probably 20,000 Catholics, you know. I heard him speak, though, one time at a function at the Catholic school I was working at. He was doing a tour of the country. And he actually brought up, like, you know, one of the students asked, basically, how do you not... it was a very liberal, white liberal guilt kind of question. Like, how do we not destroy their amazing, you know, Pocahontas culture? Cause everything's perfect. And he basically said, there's witches and medicine men and paganism. And he actually said these things. It was an amazing answer. And then he spoke to the beautiful devotion that the native people have to the Blessed Mother up there. He actually made a joke and he said, they love Mary so much that we'll go for a prayer meeting and it'll turn into 2.5 hours of litanies and things and extra rosaries, which is kind of special. So he was a good bishop, but he was literally sent to Siberia, you know, actual. So there have been a couple bishops that said no. It's sad that this is something that we should think is makes them a good bishop, but they said no to raising pride flags in local Catholic schools. I should add to... in Ontario, the Catholic school system, just like in Alberta and one other province, I believe it's New Brunswick, it's actually funded by the government, which is another huge problem. I worked in that system for over half a decade, and it's funded by taxpayer dollars. So you know what that brings with it. I mean, it's bad enough in public schools. There was relative freedom in the Catholic schools for a while, but as the culture has gone so far left, when people go to the government and say, well, I pay for this school, my kids don't, so I can put my kid there, even if they're an atheist, they shouldn't have to do religion class. There's not really any ground to stand on when they say no, because it's publicly funded. So to answer your question though, about bishops, not really, sadly.
Yeah. Mostly middle of the road. Now, how about the political situation? It sounds like it's somewhat similar. How long has Trudeau been prime minister there? It's prime minister that he is, right? Boy, I'm showing ignorance.
Yeah, he's prime minister. He's 2015. October 2015.
And, okay, give us a little bit of a layout, because obviously here in America, we think of things as red and blue, Republican, Democrat. It's not quite as simple as that, but that's our general sense. Mm-hmm. What are the major parties, and do they correspond at all to like Democrats and Republicans here in America, or is it really a whole different beast there?
Similar, but different. You know, we're a parliamentary system. I know America has technically more than two parties, but effectively it's a two-party system. Right. Canada is a multi-party system with two or three dominant parties. So you have the Conservative Party, which is run by a man who makes Mitt Romney look like a far-right conservative. So that tells you where, he's pro-choice, he's pro-vaccine mandate. He just happens to be good at math. That's why he's conservative. So, you know, he won't put us into insane amounts of debt, but he still will, because sin is very, I always say sin is expensive. So whatever, his name is actually Aaron O'Toole, so we just call him the Tool. But and then there's Trudeau, runs the Liberals. And then the third party, which is a major party, is the New Democrat Party. They're like if Bernie Sanders had a political party.
Okay. Like the Green, almost like the Green Party maybe here.
We have a Green Party.
Oh, you do have a Green Party. Okay.
The New Democrats, they're really just, they started off, it's weird, okay? So they started off 60s-ish as a cooperative, almost rural party in a sense. So they weren't liberal in their values, but it was that era of combining farming interests and trade unions and things. So they were, you could be conservative, you could be pro-life, you could actually argue that they were historically less radical in their values than the liberals, but they were very collectivist in their economics. That has turned into collectivist thinking and everything, as it always does. Right. So in the last election, it was in September, the Conservatives got more popular vote with about 5.5 million, but they didn't get the same amount of seats as the Liberals, who got about 5.25 million. The New Democrat Party got around a couple million. There's a wild card party though. This is what parliamentary politics, it's like Europe in this sense. There's the Bloc Québécois, which are a nationalist party out of Quebec. They got about 39 out of 60 seats from the province of Quebec. They don't run anyone outside of Quebec at all. They're just a separatist party, and they advocate for Quebec interests. And then there's a libertarian party called the People's Party, which is very popular nationwide, but didn't win any seats. They got almost a million votes, but couldn't get it in the right areas. But generally speaking, Canada is liberal and conservative, but on the left, there's just a few options.
But it sounds like if the Conservative Party is, I mean, kind of moving the same direction as the GOP is here in a lot of ways, if you don't count Trump. So that doesn't sound very good. And so you said Trudeau, he is. Tell us about Trudeau. To be honest, down here, maybe he is up there too. He's just looked at as a joke, I think, by most people. I mean, he's Castro's son and, you know, that stuff like that. He's the pretty boy that has nothing up here. That's I think, the general perception of most Americans to him. Is that the perception of Canadians as well? Or is there something more there?
Yeah, Trudeau is a little bit of an enigma. He's clearly an idiot. And I mean that like with all charity. Although he does have certain skills, he's good at memorizing lines. So whatever level of idiocy he operates with, he does have a basic understanding of how to memorize a script. Okay. His father was the prime minister. His Canadian father was the prime minister. He was an avowed Marxist. He was a Catholic. Pierre Elliott Trudeau, so the French name. Trudeau's family is very strange. His mother was basically a groupie in that era of groupies in the 70s and stuff. I believe she had her child. I believe basically she became intimate with Trudeau's father, who was on one of his marriages. By the time he was, I think his mother was around 18 and his father was like 50. So it's a very, '70s rock and roll weirdness sort of thing. So it's no surprise that Trudeau has had a few pervert scandals, which, you know, they get swept under the carpet, but that's what he grew up in. So his dad was a longtime prime minister. His dad is hated in the West, loved by liberals in the East. He took a ton of money away from Alberta by equalizing payments for oil and stuff. And anyway, but so Trudeau is basically prime minister because of his name. He's never had a real job. He was a substitute teacher. He was a snowboard instructor. He was a pothead. You know, he wore blackface. He really is nothing. I guess we're a monarchy, you know, in that sense. So we have the son of the former king. But he's a really good actor, and he's, you know, the white suburban moms find him handsome. So, you know, Canadians, this is the thing I should probably say. Canadians are not very politically astute and aware. Our state media is our biggest media entity here. It'd be like if PBS was the most watched station, which is very strange. There's almost a North Korea level, control of the media here. You have to be part of the regulatory body. It's almost impossible to get on if you don't jive with what they want to say.
Wow.
So, you know, this is one of the reasons why lockdowns have been so insane here, and vaccine passports and all this sort of stuff. I'll try to keep us on YouTube. There isn't a diversity of media opinion here in the mainstream. It's just not possible. It's just the infrastructure is too strong against it. So you only, the message that you get, if you're, unless you're working really hard to not see the narrative, you only see the narrative. Mm. You know, we can make fun of Fox News and stuff, but I would kill for a Fox News North. At least Fox News doesn't like the Democrats. You know, if we had at least a station here that was watched by everybody that didn't like the liberals, it would change everything, but we don't. People vote for Trudeau. I mean, they don't even know why they're voting for Trudeau. They vote for Trudeau because they don't even know what's going on.
Right.
So conservatives, they consult a newspaper called the National Post, which is basically like a Wall Street Journal. But even there, that's owned by, it's subsidized by the states. They won't go too far. You know, Trudeau, it's an enigma why he's prime minister. No one really likes him. But people just say they're a liberal because it's fashionable to be a liberal. So they just vote for him because they also don't hate him.
Right.
That makes sense. It's a very apathetic sort of involvement.
Right. Wow. Okay. Let's move on then to, the COVID response there. From what I've gathered, it started off as bad as it was here but it stayed bad, or worse than here. So tell us a little bit about first how. And I'm talking about the church. I know that the politicians want to shut down everywhere, but how did the church respond to COVID there initially, and then how have they continued to since then, since the initial outbreak?
Well, the diocese that I'm most familiar with is London Diocese, which is where I technically live. It's massive. It covers a 3.5-hour expanse. It's pretty much all of Southwestern Ontario. And they shut down before the government said so. That's how they responded.
Wow.
I know I do apologetics for the SSPX or whatever. I don't get paid for it. I just, you know, whatever. That's one of the episodes we did. I've been shadow banned basically from speaking in the London Diocese. I was unceremoniously told that. I've actually sat down for a long meeting with the Vicar General, who I will not say anything about, it's a very, it's a worm tongue situation in this diocese. You know, the bishop doesn't really say anything, and his couple advisors around him, the vicars, say everything. They are full on COVID. They're full leftist. You know, I sat in a meeting with this vicar, and I was trying to bring up something that I thought he at least had to believe, pretend to believe was true, that you shouldn't use contraception. And his advisor, a layperson who's the vicar's advisor, was there and said, no, you can use contraception with a good conscience. And the vicar just kind of shrugged his shoulders. So that's kind of the state of the diocese here. It's not uncommon the rest of the country. So they shut down really strong, even when the government said they could open up. You know, there's been no real effort to accommodate. So I go to the society, as people know, and they did everything they possibly could during the lockdown. It was very severe, and the fines were really steep. So, you know, people will say, why didn't they just buck the trend and have masses and screw it and whatever? Well, the thing is, you know, some Protestant pastors have done that and they've literally been thrown in jail. So it's been a matter of prudence of, right. You know, how do you manage the catacombs, basically? It's not an easy question. And but as soon as we've been able to be open in any capacity, the society priests have done, and Eastern priests, actually, basically any of the priests that are not under the local bishops. So the Byzantine eparchies and things, they've done a really good job as well.
Good for them.
They just did whatever they could. So and if it meant having five masses, because you can only have 15% capacity, they did it. If it meant, playing with numbers and optics so it looked like things were kosher, then they did it. Whereas the diocese is just to the letter, if you can't get to you in some churches, you know, people would show up to the SSPX mass because they'd go to their mass half an hour early, but they were out of seats and they just weren't allowed in. And there was no registration system way to know. It was just sort of try and get a seat, you know. So it's been a disaster as far as the diocese are concerned.
So right now, if you a typical diocesan parish in, let's say, the London diocese there in Canada, in Ontario, what's their rules? Like, what do they do? Like, from the bishop, what are they being told to do?
It changes. So I don't think in Ontario singing was ever completely prohibited, but it was heavily restricted. So I haven't been to a diocesan mass in a long time. State of this diocese, well, I don't know if I'll ever go again. But we have friends who go to the Novus Ordo and stuff, and they said that there were concessions made, like there could be a choir in the choir loft. And if they were the same family, they could sing near each other. Otherwise, they had to sing 6 feet apart and they had to put their masks on when there were no songs and things like that. You got to have 6 feet in between the pews, which I don't know. You got to wear your mask. It's funny. The priests don't have to wear their masks when performing the mass, when saying the mass, but they have to wear it when distributing Holy Communion, which is just so weird and demoralizing. That's actually been one of the big differences is in the traditional mass, you can't see the priest's face 90% of the time. So if they weren't wearing one, no one would know.
Yeah, right.
Whereas the Novus Ordo, it's very obvious. But so it just depends on the place. There are no vaccine passports. So recently what the government has said, October 25th, because we have vaccine passports here for anything non-essential, restaurants and things like that.
So wait a minute, just be clear on the vaccine passport. So right now, any non-essential, so like basically the things that were initially shut down, probably, I would guess, those you cannot enter without a vaccine passport?
Sort of. So it's funny, some things you don't need them. Like you can go get a massage or a manicure without a vaccine passport. You would think
like, a massage particularly.
Well, you know, you talk about touching, yeah, right?
I know, exactly. They must have a good lobbying group.
Yeah, and I think because it technically counts as health or something like that.
Okay.
You don't have to have a vaccine passport to get a haircut. But you do have to have a vaccine passport to go to a gym, because this is about your health, to go to a restaurant. But you can go into the restaurant. This is how crazy it is, okay? I had to write an article on this for LifeSite. I went through all the regulations. So if you don't have to have a vaccine to work at the restaurant. Your employer might ask for one, but it's not like a rule, but for the province. So you could work at the restaurant for a 12-hour shift, and you could, I think conceivably, you could eat the restaurant food on your break in the break room, I guess. But you couldn't come back as a patron.
Science.
Yeah,
because science.
You could work there as a contractor. So the rules are like you can go get takeout. You can go and wait in the restaurant. The funny thing is, I don't wear a mask because you don't have to. People think you do, but you just don't. You just don't wear it. No one says anything. So I've gone into restaurants where they require a passport and waited standing at the bar without my mask. Whereas people who show their passports walk in with their masks. It's just, it's all very science-y. But church, so on October 25th, they changed it where churches now, they are allowed to have as many people as they can, as long as they can distance.
Okay.
Which is totally subjective. Our priests are very creative in how they interpret that. I'm very thankful. Or if you require vaccine passports, you are allowed to have full capacity.
Okay.
That's where we are. So, but the diocese so far has not implemented passports.
Okay. But now the Diocese of Grand Falls, which I believe is in Newfoundland, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So the Diocese of Grand Falls. Now, how do you know anything about the Diocese of Grand Falls? Like how big it is? Is it like a larger one or an outlier or?
Well, Newfoundland is not big. I think it's under a million people. I think they have about 30 parishes.
Okay. Okay, so in that diocese, the bishop there, Anthony Daniels, back on October 22nd, he said basically it's mandatory. It says effective October 22nd, 2021, it will be mandatory for all persons 12 and older wishing to attend masses or services in our churches to demonstrate proof of vaccination by using the vaccine passport, NL VaxPass, or by showing proof of vaccination by presenting their QR code before entering our churches. Therefore, beginning the weekend of October 23rd, 24th, entry into our churches will be restricted to those who show proof of vaccination. Now, first of all, do you know anything about like this bishop before this? Like, was he already known to be, is he just a COVIDian or was he already kind of a leftist before this? Or it's kind of like, this is the first we've heard of him because he did something so stupid.
So he was a protege of the London Diocese. Okay. I think he was the auxiliary. I know he's from the London Diocese, so I don't know if they made him auxiliary here first and then sent him there, or if he was sent somewhere as an auxiliary first and then there. But this is where he's from.
Okay.
There are only, I think there are only like three diocesan seminaries left in the whole country or something. St. Philip Neri Seminary in Toronto is actually pretty decent. If you're lucky and you're a diocesan priest, you'll go do 4 years there and do your degree. And then you'll go back to your terrible seminary. But so anyone who's come through the London seminary, the London Diocese Seminary, including Cardinal Collins, who actually Cardinal Collins is one I should have. He was good pre-COVID. He would stand up for any doctrinal thing, but he's become a total COVIDian for the most part. Yeah. Although he speaks up about pro-life and all that kind of stuff, you know. And he's a cardinal. But that's right, he's from Toronto. But so there's only a couple seminaries that are diocesan. And one is in London, the London Diocese. I went to college at the King's College there, where they invited James Martin to speak. So that tells you. That seminary is really bad. It just is. I mean, I've got lots of friends who have gone there and left and things, and it's just they forbid you as a seminarian from hearing the Latin Mass. Like, you're not allowed to go to it on your free time. And in the summer, they say you're not allowed to go. And it's a crazy place.
You could get infected by the virus of traditionalism.
Yes, exactly. So when you go through there, I mean, it's writings on the wall. One of our auxiliary bishop of London Diocese, I know him personally, Bishop Dobrowski. He's Polish. He's a decent prelate because he's Polish and not from Canada. You know, like he came through a Polish seminary.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Now, so I know that another bishop, I can't remember the name, another diocese in Canada tried the vaccine mandate in masses. Where was that?
Moncton, New Brunswick.
Oh, right. That's right. And then it was, but then there's a lot of pushback and he rescinded it. Now, to my understanding, Grand Falls has implemented this and it's still in effect, correct?
Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about Newfoundland, but I believe, actually, you know who's from Newfoundland? Matt Maher.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I don't like to think about his political views nowadays when I hear his old songs, but
I know. I know. I'm the same way. I've seen some things by him. I've been disappointed. And I was a big fan of his music years ago.
Yeah, he's a great musician.
Yeah.
So I think the faith is relatively dead in Newfoundland. Newfoundland is a totally interesting story. It was relatively dead as a province. It was based on fishing. In fact, total side note, but you can find documentaries online of the Irish in Newfoundland, because Newfoundland was not part of Canada until 1948. It was still Britain. You can find documentaries. There were families who were in Newfoundland for 100 years by the mid-1900s. But people would come from Ireland, and it was like walking into Ireland, because they were Irish fishing villages where they still spoke the same language and dialect and played the same music. Anyway, so Newfoundland was, it had a very strong Catholic thing, but overfishing, etc., it had a mass exodus of Newfies, we call them. It's kind of like Ireland, where there's like 40 million Irish people, but only three live in Ireland. 3 million. Right. There's probably 3 million Newfies on Canada, but only 800,000 live in Newfoundland.
Right.
And so they had an exodus in general. So it's a very elderly population. So I don't think that this whole thing is really even affecting people, basically, if that makes sense.
And also, basically, on what you said about the kind of the Canadian psyche, it's not like you're going to get a lot of people naturally protesting it, or because I was saying when I heard that, I was like, you just got to show up. And even if you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, just show up and don't show your passport, just to be in solidarity against this terrible. I mean, this is talking about an uncanonical decree from a bishop, and just go anyway. But I guess that's not really the Canadian thing to do, is it?
No, and I don't know what's going on there. I mean, I actually had to write the article for LifeSite on that thing, and I looked into it, and I emailed the diocese, and there was no response, of course. And
right,
there's a saying in Canada amongst bishops, they don't want to get LifeSited. That's an actual thing.
Because isn't LifeSite based in Canada?
Yeah, it's from Canada. Yeah.
Okay,
that's we're actually in Virginia now for our American office, so that was pretty fun last night for the, colleagues, but.
Okay, so in your opinion, then it seems like your guess would be that this decree is just going to stay in effect unless somebody from higher up, like a Vatican official, which I doubt they're going to do anything, would say something. Correct? I mean, because it doesn't sound like there's really any true resistance to it.
Yeah, there are rumors that the vaccine passports are going to go away by January. It's this whole thing, if we just talk about this whole corona thing in general, it's a very nebulous Marxism, because it's based on a house of cards. You know, one thing that this is a little bit of Canadian inside baseball here, but just like you guys have the CDC numbers with the deaths and all that sort of stuff,
right?
We have the Health Canada numbers, okay? They don't come out. I had to write an article for this every year until 2019. There's actually a section on the numbers for flu and pneumonia deaths. They don't separate them because it's really hard to do so. And then there's another section for other respiratory illnesses, et cetera. Anyway, last year there was no flu, as we've all heard, et cetera.
Right, right.
So just, recently, Health Canada put out, we took a vacation.
Yeah.
it went south to Florida. But last year, or last month, there was a report from Public Health Canada that came out basically giving a hint that they were calling into question, or, you know, the diagnostics might be a little bit fluid, you know, because we don't really know, and how many deaths and stuff. And I did a whole report on it because it didn't add up. And they said, well, these are subject to change. We're reaching a very watershed moment right now, I think, globally with the whole COVID narrative, because here in Canada, end of November, numbers for 2020 come out. So it's kind of like, will they fully cross the Rubicon and just get rid of, will they go full 1984 and get rid of every statistic they've ever used and just pretend everything's different? I actually don't think they will. And I think they're going to see the attention span of people today is about 2 months.
Right.
So they'll just kind of forget it. We saw that with masks.
Right. Yeah.
Until July, there was no, and then it was. So I don't know. I think it's going to go away relatively soon because people are just getting sick of it. And there are elections coming up, but I don't know.
Okay. So basically, the only way the vaccine passport leads for mass is if the government says, okay, there's no need for they're just going to go along with whatever the government says.
And I don't know if they're enforcing it either. Like, I don't know what each parish is like.
Right.
That would be the different thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So, So anything else going on in Canada in the Catholic realm that should be of interest to us? Like any other, like, are there any, I guess I'm asking, is there any signs for hope? Are there any good things going on? I mean, that you see anywhere in Canada for Catholics?
Yeah. So it's funny. you know, I don't mean to always get on my SSPX soapbox, but here in Canada, like, it's mission territory. Okay. Right. That's all we have. You know, I mean, there are some decent diocesan priests. I know some, but they're under the thumb of some very tyrannical bishops. So where I go, it's actually, we joke that it's, we say that it's in New Hamburg, Ontario. And we joke that St. Mary's, Kansas, which is like SSPX Mecca in the States, you know, right. We joke that's New Hamburg South, you know, because, with 400, 500 people at the parish, we drive from all over to go to it. I live about an hour away from it. There's a school, everything. I mean, it's a really growing thing. And that sort of thing is really blossoming. It's really blossoming. And one of the positives out of this whole Corona lockdown stuff is that a lot of people sort of soften their hearts, not just to the SSPX, but the tradition in general, because a lot of the priests that were willing to go the extra mile were either Latin Mass saying priests or they were traditionally minded. Okay.
Right.
Like Father Mark Goring is kind of like that. And even though he's a charismatic guy. So that's been good. And also, it's really given us a kick in the pants that we actually kind of have to do something. So there's a new political party. I just interviewed them. The lady who is a member of provincial parliament, she was kicked out of the of her caucus last year in 2020 for voting against the continual, I call it the enabling act, the continual reopening act of Ontario, which is the closing act of Ontario. She voted against it and was kicked out and she's a traditional Catholic. Her husband's actually a devout Greek Orthodox. And I interviewed them for LifeSite. They have a new party. They're pro-life, pro-family, all that sort of stuff. It's causing a lot of people to consider homeschooling. It's causing a lot of people to consider, you know, why are we in this mess that we're in? It's small, but it's significant. You know, sometimes I think we're so, we look at things as a numbers game. We think, okay, we got to have a critical mass of like 51% of the population has to go a certain way and then we'll finally follow. That's never how it works historically. For better or for worse, when you look at, for example, what happened in Russia with the Soviets, the Bolsheviks were actually very small. I think they were around 3 or 4% of support. But that 3 or 4%, and the Bolsheviks were bad, but it's just an analogy. It was a very motivated 3 or 4% that all were united with doing the same thing. Okay. And it was same with the National Socialists in Germany. It was a third party. Okay. And before that it was smaller, but they were all motivated with the same thing. Whereas the other groups were not really motivated to do anything in a united way. So they were able to take over. Right now, if you ask your average leftist, what do you believe in? They don't believe in anything. Okay. Most conservatives don't believe in anything. So it's fertile breeding ground right now for motivated Christian patriots in Canada, where all you really have to do is stand for something and do something about it. There isn't really much resistance. You know, part of the paradox of being in a country that's been very demoralized is that it's like that old desert fathers sort of proverb story where he went to a village where the one desert father says he went to a village which was basically possessed by the devil, and he could see the demons and they were all taking naps because they had nothing to do. It was a very sin. Whereas he went to a village where everyone was living in a state of grace, and it was like celestial warfare was going on because the devils had to work on overdrive because the angels were answering to the prayers of the people, etc. You know, evil gets very lazy. Trudeau is very lazy. The liberals are extremely lazy. They're just a bunch of nut jobs at this point, and they just say the craziest things, but they don't really do anything. So, you know, it's funny right now in Ontario, you can homeschool without any restrictions at all. You don't have to present anything to the government at all. And high schools will still accept your kids. Universities will even accept homeschool kids if you write a letter and show your essays and things. So to be honest, you know, we actually really thought about leaving. I applied for jobs at schools in the States. I actually went for the visa, tried it all. We weren't sure what to do. We ended up praying a novena to St. Anne. Someone told us to for some reason, and it was very clear. So we stayed here. We live in a community now. We just moved. I won't say where, you know. We moved to a different community. Everyone's pretty much open to life. You know, Christians of all stripes are against this nonsense. And we just start finding ways to just live our lives and not be a part of the whole matrix. And it's not really that hard to do. So it's kind of a double-edged sword here.
Yeah. And that's why I've been kind of encouraging people who have been listening to this podcast and reading Crisis as well, is to do those things, to create those local communities like that. And if you don't live in one, you might have to move like you guys did. I mean, you just might have to find one, because what's more important? I mean, at this point, you need to have the support of people around you. And like you said, it's like, it's funny because, you know, obviously I wrote a book against the ecumenical movement, but this is where you have your true ecumenism, the yes. good ecumenism, where all of a sudden you see some Protestant pastor who's fighting against the COVID regulations, and God bless him. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, he's on your side when it comes to freedom, when it comes to being able to practice your faith without the government boot on your neck. And so, you know, I think that's, you know, that can be a wonderful thing. And it's good to hear that those things are happening up there in Canada.
Yeah, it's, you know, I wrote an article for 1 Peter 5 the other day, and liberalism is a sin, but liberty is godly, you know. I was talking to my priests about this, traditional priests, and I was like, so Father, you know, where do we go? Can, if there's a Protestant group, for example, and there are many of them here, who will put out like a churches sign on petition sort of thing, can you sign on as a Catholic? And he said, well, it depends, you know. If the intent of the letter or the petition or the movement is, because of the gospel, we reject your tyranny and what you're doing to us is evil, he says, for sure you can sign on to that. That's a defensive posture against overreach. Or if they say, you know, sign this because we believe it's wrong that the government is closing churches under these circumstances, we can sign that because it is wrong. That's not the same as, you know, here's our unified declaration of faith or something. Right. That's different. And that's something that the Catholic Church has always done prudentially. You know, you can look to the Crusades, you can look to fighting against Freemasons and things. There have always been prudential alliances by Catholic monarchs and presidents and prelates and things. When there are the barbarians are at the gate, you don't have to ask your neighbor what they think about the Nicene Creed. Right. You have to say, do you think those guys are evil? Would you like to pick up a weapon and come with me? And then you can figure out your theological disagreements after. Okay. Right. And that's the position that we're in here in Canada. There is a fine line. You can't cross it. Okay. But you don't have to. So, you know, right now, if you're a Canadian, it's a exciting time because I was at a rally for the People's Party of Canada, which is basically the Libertarian Party, but it's not cringe like the American Libertarian Party. Yeah. It's actually, it's very much a patriot party. It's really great. I was there for a rally just before the election, and it was great. I mean, I don't know who was Catholic there. I know there was a mix of Protestants and Catholics, but I looked around, and, you know, we joke about the demographic advantage. And it seems kind of far in the future, but it's not. You know, there are more people in Canada now that are over the age of 65 than under the age of 15. That generation is gone very soon. Like, we're talking about within a decade, it's cut in half. Okay. No one's having kids here except for Christians, Muslims as well. But even Muslims are socially conservative. Like, they're pro-life and pro-traditional marriage, and ironically an ally in the culture war, at least as far as it goes. And, no one is having children in Canada except for patriots, except right. for Christians, Catholics. So I was walking in the parking lot, and we had four kids, and lots of people had bigger families than us there. And I joked to these young men who were about 20 years old, and they were Canadian t-shirts and rah-rah and freedom and all that kind of stuff. And I said, boys, this isn't a good, you got to take this one step further. I'm like, if you want to win this election forever, you have to realize that the libs, they don't procreate. And they laughed. And I said, I'm serious. You got to go have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 12, 20 kids. You've got to go have your kids, and you will win this culture war for the next 80 years. And we're at the precipice of the demographic winter here. So for us who have children, in the neighborhood that we're in this tiny, like literally a one stoplight town, I walk for 5 minutes and I'm surrounded by cornfields. It's like the Midwest or something in right. Kansas, you know, but around Lake Huron. And, I had never seen, I was living in a city. There were 10 times as many kids out for Halloween trick-or-treating here, even though our population is like 1,100 people. because parents have massive families. So, you know, in a sense, the future is kind of bright. You just got to be patient.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I do think that's something we've been saying for a long time. And I do think it does take a long time, but it's a real thing. And honestly, as culture gets more despairing, more desperate, people are going to be, who embrace that culture, are not going to have kids, because why would you have kids if you think the world is awful? And like, we think the world is awful, but we actually know there's good news behind it always. And so, you know, we can continue to have kids even in the worst of times, because we have a hope that's beyond this world. So, okay, well, I think we're going to wrap it up here. I really appreciate this look at Canada and Catholics of Canada, because I do think, like I said at the beginning, it's something I think American Catholics should be interested in. First of all, just because you guys are our brothers and sisters in Christ, and obviously we're all in this together. But I also think that there is a reflection. You guys have a different personality than we do. We're more annoying. You guys are more nice. But at the same time, you know, I think that there's a lot of a big relationship there that, you know, as one of the countries goes, the other one, you know, will go along as well at times. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate Kennedy. And like I said to people, check out Kennedy's show, The Kennedy Profession, on the Crusade channel. What is the, I'll put it in the show notes, but what is the link that they should go to catch that?
So just go to crusadechannel.com. It's pretty simple. It's a radio station. We've got 3 daily shows, I think 4 now, actually. And it's talk, conservative talk radio, Catholic perspective. I'm the afternoon guy, and there's a midday, and there's morning with Mike Church, who was on XM for a lot of years. And just go there. You can listen to a free preview. You get about half of it without ads for $10 a month. So that's like 2 soy lattes. So don't drink those for a lot of reasons. But for the price of 2 lattes, you could sign up for $10 a month and you could get unlimited content. And it's an amazing station. So go to crusadechannel.com. Yeah.
And I think things like the Crusade Channel, supporting them is a good idea, because, you know, big tech is going to shut us down completely. I mean, we've already seen a lot of our friends and compatriots get shut down. And so having an independent station that is supported by us, I think, is a good thing, because it allows us to get our voice out there in alternative ways. So,
yep, that's good. I think that the servers that they use are out of Switzerland or something, which they have similar security infrastructure as they do for their banking. So it's basically shutdown proof, you know, unless you're advocating some illegal trafficking or something, it's basically going to stay up. So we're good to go, and we're always going to be there. So crusadechannel.com.
That's great. Okay, so everybody check that out. And again, thanks a lot, Kennedy, and everybody else. Until next time, God love you.